I'm going to call the meeting to order. We don't have a quorum. If we achieve one in the next short while, there's a couple of author's amendments to the bill and a couple of motions that need to be made. But if we don't, we'll just recess and take all of those orders of business up this afternoon in our regular committee time. I wanted to have this opportunity to make the draft of the bill available to all of the interested parties, and I should explain that the bill was drafted to it's a delete all, so nothing is going to change in that. It was drafted to as a delete all to House File 2305, but in our discussions about how things are going to match up with the Senate, which I'm afraid still remains somewhat unclear, I thought that the surest way that we could achieve some kind of a match is to use House File 1392, which is my bill that is included currently in the Senate Finance Bill. So we will be making that amendment when we're able to. We are currently in conflict with the Finance Committee, and we have members with bills up before Finance, as well as members, including myself, who are members of that committee. So what we will do if we don't have a quorum and can't make the motions that need to be made is that we'll just recess and do that this afternoon. But it looks like we're getting close here. But not yet. Members, there will be some author's amendments that we'll have to offer this afternoon because they're still being drafted. What we can do this morning, if we're able to act on them, is a couple of things. We had told the Commerce Committee and the Department of Commerce that we would include House File 1515, it's a Dabney bill, in the omnibus bill, and that we neglected to get included, so we would be offering that as an amendment. Also, elements of House File 1251, just an Atkins bill, are included in the bill and need to be removed. We will be doing that. And also, we have an author's amendment to add some language to the extension of the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force to bring that terminology into sync with the current committees in the House and the Senate and their name changes. That's what we will be doing, and we will do a run-through of the bill this afternoon in our regular time. And I see Representative Westrom's here, so I think we can act on the correcting amendments. And at least we can get the bill before us. So I observe that the quorum is present. We will call the meeting officially to order. Clerk will take the roll. We need to approve the minutes from the last meeting. Representative Briner would be so kind as to make that motion.
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the March 21st meeting.
Approval of the minutes has been moved. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Minutes are adopted. Members, as I explained, we do need to get the vehicle bill before us. And that motion would be, and the chair moves to reconsider the motion by which House File 1392 was recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance to get the bill back before us. And it still is in our possession. This is just a technical motion. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion is adopted. The motion on that bill then would be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. So that bill is before us. So the next motion would be I have to incorporate an amendment into my amendment, which would be on line 1.1 of the A070553 amendment, strike 2305 and insert 1392. And members, then I would offer the A070553 amendment with that incorporation. That's what will get the bill before us. We don't have any other. Great. Okay. That is the motion to adopt A070553. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, could you tell us again what the targets are the Ways and Means gave to us just for the committee? How much?
We will go through the spreadsheet this afternoon, Representative Magnus, but I can tell you that we're $33,000 under our target in this bill.
Okay. Thanks.
With that, members, I would like to move the H2305A7 amendment. I need to incorporate into that amendment on line 1.1, striking 2305 and inserting 1392. Members, this is the amendment that simply changes. We have included in the bill an extension of the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force for 1 year, and this is simply language that names the correct committees as members of that task force. So. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? That amendment is adopted. The other amendment that I think we can adopt at this time, members, is the H2305A6, which, as I said, is a the substance of House File 1515, which was passed out of the Commerce Committee. It's a commerce bill, and we had intended to include it. It was just an oversight that it was not included. So we should roll that in at this time. Again, I would incorporate in my amendment on line 1.1, striking 2305 and inserting 1392. And I will move the A6 amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That amendment is adopted. Members, I think with that we have copies of the spreadsheet and the bill and those amendments available at this time. Everyone will have an opportunity to look through those, and we will do the run-through of the spreadsheet and the bill at our regular committee time, 2:15 this afternoon. And Mr. Pomeroy, where are we meeting this afternoon? We will be in room 200, our regular room at the regular time, to take up the bill. And with that, members, the meeting is in recess until 2:15 this afternoon, room 200. Energy Policy and Finance Division to order. For those of you who were not present this morning, we just distributed the bill, amended the delete all, enter House File 1392, which is now the finance bill, and distributed copies, and that's about all that happened. We did adopt a couple of amendments, one of which we need to correct, which we might as well get out of the way first. Actually, we need to get the procedural matters for that straight. So I think what we will do first is just go to Mr. Soderberg, who is going to run us through the spreadsheet on the bill. Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll just go very quickly through the spreadsheet. First of all, I probably should do an overview of how the spreadsheet is set up so that it's pretty simple. We try to make it as simple as possible to read. If you look on page one of the spreadsheet, the first thing to recognize is that all these numbers are in thousands. So when you see, for example, the first number in column, the first column there, 11, that would be $11,988,000. So just keep that in mind as you go through the spreadsheet. The second thing is that the spreadsheet goes left to right, and the addition is down. But you'll see that the base is current law. It's what the legislature did in the 2005 and 6 sessions. And then there's adjustments made up for the, like, the one-time fundings, transfer programs, and it would be if the legislature would say that we will fund the agencies as we left in 2006. The CHERS RECs are 0809, and there is a four-year window showing here. We also show the tails for 10 and 11. Likewise, the governor, and then the last two columns are a comparison between the governor and the CHERS REC. So I'll just, with that, I'll just begin, Mr. Chairman. On line 7 is the first change item. This is the governor's rec that was carried in Representative Atkins' bill, a House File 1748 that went through the Commerce Committee. We're carrying the money of that bill. It's $200,000 a year ongoing, and the governor, it's the governor's rec, and so there's no difference. The second one is House File 1550. Again, we're carrying the money. This is a debt management service providers regulation. It's like consumer counseling for debt. This is the money that allowed the department to implement that bill should it become law. The next item is the governor's compensation adjustment on line 9. The governor provided for a 2% factor for compensation increases for the next two bienniums. And the chair's rec also incorporates that those dollars. The next one, I believe, is Representative Canoose. I think that may travel separately, but I'll just tell you these are the dollar amounts that are involved in that one. And what this is really, right now, the vendors or the licensees go through the portal and pay a transaction fee. This would just make it a surcharge, so it's just bringing out of the state books money that is otherwise being spent by the licensees. Going to petroleum tank release cleanup, both the chair's rep and the governor are at base, so there's no change items. For administrative services, moving to line 34, there's a compensation adjustment. Again, that's a 2% in both the chair's rep and the governor's. If you go down to market assurances, this is the governor's senior team initiative. It would allow them to hire 4 auditors for investigating a fraud against seniors and a multidiscipline type fraud, and it would also provide 3 auditors for the increasing problems in the lending and housing areas. The next one is a Representative Tilbury's bill. We're carrying the dollars to of $8,000 a year going out. This bill came again from Commerce. The final item on line 50 is the governor's compensation adjustment. You can see the totals for market assurances. Moving to energy and telecommunications. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. The first item is on line 65. It's the governor's rec of $12 million for E85 Everywhere grants. The chair's REC would have that at $8 million over 4 years at $2 million a year. The difference is $8 million in the first biennium because it would move the money over the two bienniums, $4 million higher on the out biennium. The next one is the Hydrogen Renewable Energy Initiative. This was the file that this bill was amended into. It's $10 million one time in the first year. All of these items that are indented, going all the way down to a compensation adjustment, I'm not going to repeat every time, but these are the chair's rec only. There is no governor companion initiative. The next one is...
Mr. Steinberg, I think we, unless I was distracted for a moment, I think we did skip the second item, the IRE funding.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. The IRE funding would have, under the chair's rec, would have $3 million in 09, the second year of this next biennium, and then going out, the base would be adjusted to a $5 million per year ongoing funding, and that would be from the general fund as well.
Members, I should point out, as long as we're on this item, that included in the bill also is an extension of the current funding mechanism for IRE. The contribution that Xcel Energy is making as part of its SIP arrangement, and that's extending through the next two fiscal years, which is why we're only putting $3 million in this biennium. It would, in fact, fund IRE at the $5 million level ongoing. Mr. Soderberg, sorry about that.
Pardon me for missing that, Mr. Chairman. The next item is House File 1214. It's a Representative Knuth's bill. There are two items related to that bill. The first is the Rural Wind Energy Development Revolving Loan Program. The chair's rec would capitalize that at $3,250,000 in the first year. The next item is the Rural Wind Energy Development Assistance Program. The chair's rec would from that program at $1 million in 08 and in 09, and that would be one-time funding after that. There are no tails on that one. The next one is a Scalzi bill, House File 393. It's the geothermal heat pump use study, and that is at $50,000 one-time in 08 only. The next one is the Linden Hills bill that we heard on Friday. This is a Hornstein bill. It's at $45,000 for the demonstration project. The next one is a combination of Representative Gunther's bill and Representative Welty's bill. Representative Gunther's bill is a $3 million one time in the first year. Representative Welty's language that establishes the program is also included in the bill. The next item is the St. Paul Steam Plant producing facility that was also heard on Friday by the committee. That's $4 million one time in 08. And finally, there's the governor's compensation adjustment that we talked to before. One further change item on this particular page, that is House File 1517. That was Representative Gunther's bill for the deaf and hard of hearing. This one is out of the Telecommunication Access Minnesota Fund, and it's a special revenue fund for $100,000 a year ongoing. Moving on to page 3.
Mr. Soderberg, I think we skipped the 25 by 25 grant from back down.
Tried to get through this, Mr. Chairman. I saw a lot of amendments, and so I'm sorry about that. I did skip that. Sorry about that. These are two governor items, the 25 by 25 grants. The governor had recommended that there be a transfer from the Renewable Development Fund to the Department of Commerce and appropriated for these grants at $2.5 million a year in 08-09 only. The chair's rec incorporates the governor's recommendation. The next one is the Next Gen Energy Research. Again, this was to be funded with a transfer from the Renewable Development Fund under the governor's recommendation. We recommended $5 million a year. The chair's rec is $3 million for the first year, $2 million for the second year, and there would be no funding beyond fiscal year 09. Okay, we'll move on to page 3. There are not any significant differences here. Weights and measures. This is a special revenue program that's funded a petroleum inspection fee, and there is no change there. And as you can see, the totals, I think this is the most significant differences between the governor and the chair's rec. The general fund total difference between the governor and the chair in 08-09 on the two right-hand columns is $17,577,000 in 08-09 and $14,202,000 in fiscal year 10 and 11. The other significant one is the special revenue accounts, and you can read those for yourself, and the total shows the department totals under the respective governor's rec and the chair's rec. Moving on to the Public Utilities Commission, I'm going to be working off of line 134. The first one is the governor's rec incorporated in the chair's rec, and that is for the reliability administrator staff of around almost $800,000 a year. The next one is two additional staff for the utility to accommodate the increased workload at the commission. And again, that's the chair's rec, the governor's rec incorporated in the chair's rec. The next one is a $47,001 time to reflect the cost of House File 1221 that left the committee. There was a general fund cost one time for the commission of $47,000. The next one is again the governor's rec incorporated into the chair's rec, or the delete all amendment. And the next one is a credit trading system cost. That file number is wrong. That should be Senate File 4, House File 4, as Representative Peterson's bill. The governor's supplemental did not have that in his original recommendation, but he did in his supplemental recommendation, so it is paid for. And then the compensation adjustment. And that's the Public Utilities Commission. Moving on to page 4. We have a couple of items under the Department of Natural Resources. The first one is the Blue Earth County Rapid Dam for $60,000 in the first year. That was an amendment on to Representative Hornstein's bill on Friday. And the next one is, I'm not going to go there, Mr. Chairman. I'm not hooked on phonics. So I'll just say it reports and studies of $475,000. That's a Representative Eichen's bill. The next one, going down to pollution control, is a plasma torch gasification facility feasibility study for $400,000 one time in the first year. I think that's Representative Anslett's. The next one is a biogas gasification facilities air emissions study that was heard on Friday, Representative Peterson's initiative. Finally, Mr. Chair, the next one is a Representative Parks bill, House File 1908. That bill would have originally had for lead screening and lead cleanup grants coming from the Petroleum Tank Release Fund. The Chair's rec would have those grants coming from the general fund. And I guess we're getting close, Mr. Chair. Oh, finally, there is a one-year extension of the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force sunset. It would be extended for, to the end of fiscal year 08. It's a $20,000. We're carrying that as a special revenue. I'm not really sure how to carry it, Mr. Chairman. It'll be a dollar in, dollar out, but at right now I'm carrying it as a special revenue. And now the bill totals. On the general fund, the chair's rec is $20,859,000 above the governor in 08-09 and $14,202,000 in 10 and 11. The other numbers are numbers that we see elsewhere in the spreadsheet, but the final number on 194 is all agencies. Now, this is total and direct. I should tell you that the bill, when you see the numbers in the bill, you're going to see direct appropriations, but we do like to show the other things that are happening in government that are in statute or federal monies as well. And you'll see that that number is $9,129,000 above the governor in 08-09 and $18,952,000 above the governor in 10 and 11. Moving to page 5. We'll look at the revenue side. We're through the expenditure or the appropriation side of the bill. We'll look at the revenue side of the bill. Again, you know, positive means positive numbers are in additional revenues. Negative numbers, obviously, are reduction in revenue. Those items that are different from the governor will be appear in the right-hand column. Those that are the same will be a blank on the right hand two columns. The first one is the governor's rec for $10,000 a year. The next one is the security filing fees cap. The governor had recommended, under current law, that cap's at $25 million. The governor had recommended that be at $26.6 million. The cap be increased by $600,000 a year. The chair's rec bill would remove the cap, and in fact, there would be no refund as under current law. The next one is a residential mortgage originator license fee. This is an interesting concept because you actually have a fee increase and a revenue decrease. The idea being that many of the people that are kind of fly-by-night, I don't know, might be the characterization or whatever, probably wouldn't want to pay the increased fee, and so there'll be actual revenue reduction. I'm going to really go quick. I think we've heard about all these others. These are recovery items for the next one, for the initiative on residential lending reform by the department. The vehicle we've talked about, the data management system, debt management service provider. There is a fee that shows you the dollar amounts of those fees. Compensation recovery, the PUC, is likewise mostly all the recoveries because of their being able to assess the increased cost onto the regulated industries. So the net general fund impact. The committee's target was $67,950,000 for 08-09. This bill, the appropriations net of the revenue, is $67,926,000, meaning there is a $33,000 remaining target. And I think, Mr. Chair, we've talked about most of the other things, so with that, I'll close.
Thank you, Mr. Soderberg, and let me take this opportunity to thank you very much for all of the hard work that you have put into this and all of the undoubtedly unreasonable demands that you have had to put up with in the last couple of weeks. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been a pleasure working with everyone.
Are there questions for Mr. Soderberg? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Soderberg?
Yeah.
Yes. The residential mortgage fee, what is that going from to?
Soderberg. Oh, yes, I do have it. The current fee for the initial license, I'm trying to read my, I think it's going from $850 to $2,550.
A year?
A year. Is it a year? There's a 2 year difference. Is it a year? The initial license. The renewal then is going from $450 to $1,350 a year.
And what
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Soderberg, what are the numbers of licensees do we have? And you said...
Representative Westrom, we have someone from Commerce. This is
okay.
A Commerce Department
okay.
initiative.
That's fine. Mr.
Like
Chairman, if this isn't the right time to ask that, we can get into it later.
Probably as good a time as any.
All right.
Representative of Commerce is coming.
Hi, Pat Sexton from Commerce. I don't have the numbers of all the mortgage originators that we have, but what we were trying to capture with this increase was we expect the increase to go up because the number of people applying will go down, and we have to, by law, collect enough revenues to do the job of reviewing the application that we get, the background checks, etc. And this is what we think it'll take to do the job of licensing these guys.
So, Mr. Sexton,
Representative Westrom,
your premise is based on because you're going to get tougher with mortgage brokers, regulations, etc. And where are some of that? Where are some of those regulations? Is that the idea behind the licenses will go down and the price has to go up?
Mr. Sexton,
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, exactly. We are going to require that a person doing this type of work have a $250,000 net liquid net assets or a $100,000 surety bond. That'll increase the bar right there. We're also making other changes that will try to raise the bar for the types of individuals that get into this business. So we expect and hope fewer people will apply for this type of license.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Sexton,
Western.
Where is that policy language? Is that part of this bill, or is that in another bill?
Mr. Sexton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, it is in this bill.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Sexton,
Representative Westrom,
just as doing a little farm logic here, tripling the fee just ought to give most of us pause to say, oof, now what's going on here? But let's just look at this practically. If the regulations were passing, and I know you and I talked about these a couple months ago, I raised some issues, but let's just think about this. If the regulations were passing, we presume we are going to cut 2 out of 3 people out of this industry. Seems to me that net is casting a little wider than we probably want to cast it, because I don't think there's 2 out of 3 mortgage brokers in this industry that are bad. And I've heard from several of them from my district. Some are very small shops. They've opened up their own business after they've been in the industry for many years, et cetera, et cetera. Some are larger. Some are a lot more established. But this is going to affect every one of those. And I'm not sure I want to go back to every one of those and say it's justifiable to triple your license fee to $1,300 because we're going to we're going to ultimately see that two out of three of you leave this business. I just think we need to relook at that. That's essentially what you're telling me and telling us. If we have to triple the fee to cover how many people are going to not be licensing again, that's exactly what it means, isn't it?
Sorry, just a quick response. We will also now have the authority to examine the books of the folks that get into this business, which we don't currently have. So anybody that we think maybe we're getting a lot of complaints about or is operating on the margin will now have the ability to go in, if this language is passed, and audit them, which will, I think, help, again, maintain a healthy marketplace, keeping the bad actors out and the good actors in and operating professionally.
So last question, Mr.
Representative Western.
Mr. Sexton, so do you actually think two out of three are going to leave or not relicense? Because that's what would have to happen if you're going to triple the fee.
Mr. Sexton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, I guess I wouldn't put it that way. I would say we're getting new responsibilities, both in terms of the front-end licensing and in the back-end auditing these individuals. We haven't done maybe as deep a due diligence at the front-end under current law, and we certainly don't have the ability to audit them throughout the process. So I would say we're doing more work than we are currently, and that takes a higher license fee.
Thanks.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sexton, the spirit of entrepreneurialism built this country, and that means little guys roll up their sleeves and go out and scrap and scrape and earn every customer and every dollar they make. Did I hear you talk about setting a bar that becomes a barrier to entry for anybody who wants to be in this business? Whose initiative was this? Who picked these numbers? Where did this come from?
Mr. Sexton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the initiative is the Department of Commerce's, Kevin Murphy, who's the Deputy Commissioner in Financial Exams, and it is in the governor's budget. I think the shortest way to respond to your question is yes. We think that there are, and others would agree with us, that there are too many people in this marketplace that are doing too many bad deals, and we'd like to try to stop it.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beard.
I can think of some whole raft of other businesses. In fact, I may want to quit. I've threatened to do that several times, Mr. Chairman, and go into business and come back here and ask maybe your department. I'm thinking auto dealers. I'm thinking about landscape architects. I'm thinking about a whole raft of industries where it would be really cool to come down to your department and find a champion to, say, cut out about two-thirds of my competition so that I could hang in there and maybe up my prices and increase my margins. And I don't care if you come through and look at my books, as long as you don't tell people how bad my margins got all of a sudden. The philosophical underpinnings for this are so contrary to what I would expect from your department. You don't have to respond to this. I just want you to tattoo a message home to whoever thunk this up that I'm shocked, I guess, and I'm disappointed.
We'll pass that along to the governor.
Thank you.
Are there further questions for Mr. Soderberg? Thank you very much. Members, I think we have had in that presentation a pretty thorough run-through of the bill, perhaps how we should proceed. We have a number of amendments to take up. Some of them are the chair's amendments that are just basically corrections or deletions. Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, yeah, just one other quick thing on it. There's a line item of number 4. There may not be an answer for this, but I just want to mention it. The lead-based paint screening and cleanup. You know, I remember this when I was in grade school. We got little flyers to bring home, and that was 40-some years ago. Don't chew the windowsills. It might be lead-based paint. Is it possible that there's still lead-based paint out there? Rhetorical question. And will it ever end? I get, because we haven't been making lead-based paint in this country for at least 30 years. I know we got a problem. It is a serious problem, but we hear it every year, and it comes up in campaigns every year, and we're all against it. But
Representative Beard, we will have some additional language to describe this appropriation, but this is not for cleanup. And yes, the answer is yes. It's 35 years since leaded gasoline was outlawed, and the fallout from that still remains. It's in yards and in various places all over the city. There's a very interesting explanation of that, that actually right next to residences in the city is one of the highest concentrations, because it was in the air from vehicle exhaust, and some of it settled fairly close to the street or highway, and then the rest of it blew up against houses and fell there. It's an ongoing problem. It's not just lead paint. It's also from lead gasoline, which is why Representative Clark had proposed to fund us from the petroleum tank fund, which we can't do. But what this is primarily intended for is testing, because if this, and this is primarily a problem for young children, the earlier it's caught and the earlier that steps are made to deal with the problem in various ways, depending on its severity, the more problems are avoided. And, you know, the consequences of this are very severe. Just in terms of overall development. Amherst, there were a couple of words in the one of the amendments that we adopted this morning that were inadvertently omitted. First, the chair would move to reconsider the H-230587 amendment to have it before us. All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is before us. Members, if you still have that amendment in your packets, I can make this clear enough, I think, anyway. On line 1.14, currently reads 10 members of the Senate, including the chairs of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. And what needs to happen there is that after Environment, we need to insert a comma and the word energy, and then on the next line, after Resources, insert Budget Division. We have not yet got straight what some of those committees in the Senate are, but that would be the appropriate language. And, members, I would move that oral amendment. Is there any discussion? Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I was not here this morning, and maybe I'm misreading this, but on line 1.15, don't we already have the word energy in there?
Representative Hoppe, that is part of the next description, energy, utilities, technology.
Okay, so that's for the House or the Senate or the other body.
Yeah. Right. These are the Senate committees, not the House committees. All those in favor of the adoption of that amendment, the A7 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Mr. Palmer, what next? The A2 amendment, H-2305A2 amendment, I believe that's Representative Gardner. Representative Gardner, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment deals with the Linden Hills Power and Light proposal, which was for preliminary engineering design work, and they don't even yet have a grant to do the feasibility study. This just says a one-line amendment that asks that funds for the engineering study be expended only upon determination by the Commissioner of Commerce that the project is feasible.
Representative Gardner, before we proceed, you need to incorporate in your amendment the change on line one from House File Number 2305 to 1392.
So move, Mr. Chair. May I... Should I move the bill or make...
You can just incorporate that into your amendment.
I'll just incorporate that.
And I think you have moved the amendment.
Chair.
Are there questions, discussion to the amendment? Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the 2305A2 amendment.
Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Westrom, let's take up your amendment, H2305A5.
Mr. Chair, I think we need to just modify the heading to correspond to the proper bill.
Yes.
And I'll change.
Representative Westrom, you can incorporate on line one. Deleting 2305 and inserting 1392.
I'll incorporate that in my amendment, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, what this would do is, in 03, when the IRE funding was set up, one of the significant parts of it was a rural research site for some of the research, as well as the commercial deployment and the demonstration projects to occur. With a rural site, and that rural site was selected in as Morris, in the Morris Research Station. 10% of the funds, at a minimum, needed to go to there. And when I had the discussion with the department or the University of Minnesota folks, certainly that wasn't a bare minimum, but the result of that number has seemingly been the equivalent amount that they get every year. We're increasing the funds under your bill, Mr. Chair, and the dedicated funds, which I think is money well spent. But this would say 20% of that needs to be targeted to the rural research component that IRE has within it. And I think when we're increasing the funds, it would be an appropriate time to make sure that the rural research aspect is also recognized and enhanced.
Discussion to the amendment. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this amendment? Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'll wait for the testifier who may actually answer my question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dick Hemmings. I'm the director of the Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment. I actually don't have a copy of the amendment right in front of me. One of the challenges with, or first of all, I should mention that of the roughly $20 million that IRE had available over the past, now we're in our fifth year period, we have invested a little over $4 million of that in research and applied demonstration projects, on rural campuses, research and outreach centers, and so forth. One of the concerns about this level of mandate in that regard is whether or not we can actually wisely invest that level of funding at the research and outreach centers. And the reason I mention that is not because of the critical importance of that kind of work, but the human resource capacity on the Twin Cities campus versus that on the outstate campuses. So that would be my concern about raising it to this level of a mandate. I can assure you, however, that that kind of work and, frankly, expanding it, as we've done at Morris, is an important part of our mission.
Question for Mr. Hemmingson, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, in the agriculture finance budget, I believe that they're considering somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 million. There are several cellulosic ethanol projects that are on the table, one of which I'm very excited about in my community. I'm also excited about what's happening at University of Minnesota Morris, or the campus, and actually Representative Westrum look forward to visiting during the interim, and hope that you'll host me and maybe others for a tour. But just wondering if this amendment should the Ag Finance Committee, and should we fund the cellulosic ethanol projects, will this amendment affect that funding and restrict that funding, or even will that funding be considered part of the 20%?
Mr. Chair, I believe those are, depending on how the conference committees all resolve in the end, I mean, those are I think, related but probably different issues. That is to say, if those bills move forward, that's what we would do with that. I should say that with recurring funding of the nature that's in this bill for IRE, we may well have the opportunity to supplement those other bills with funding that's in this bill. So I don't think it would affect those other provisions should they become law.
Thank you.
Further discussion to the amendment? Representative Western.
Chair, just briefly, and I'd be happy to visit with Mr. Hemmingson, but the monies are going up on the St. Paul campus. And Mr. Hemmingson, the university certainly can have some of those research knowledgeable folks move to western Minnesota. Right now, there's several that live in either Representative Peterson's district, my district, Representative Marcourt's district, or Representative Heidgerken's district, because they're all around the Morris Center. So it's a little bit of an issue that you can only wisely invest in St. Paul, but not in Morris, and I think that's a little bit of the issue here. 20% I don't think is too much to ask. I think we can wisely do that. It's still going to increase the St. Paul campus number by more than double. But I'd be happy to discuss this going forward if that number is going to be unachievable.
Mr. Hemmingson.
I'd be happy, Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, to discuss that with you. We have actually, as I mentioned, set aside almost $4 million of the currently available resources to IRE for rural campuses and research and outreach centers, as was the provision in the 2003 bill. And as hard as we have tried to get those projects on the ground, we actually still have a portion of those resources available. And so it's not a question of merit or worth. It's a question of the relative proportionality of that. Representative Westrum.
Representative Westrum?
No. Unless others got questions, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer.
Further discussion to the Westrum Amendment. Representative Westrum, it sounds like maybe this is a bit more of a stretch than is feasible. I think with the response that we have from Mr. Hemmingson, that the intention is there to do as much as it is feasible. I think I would feel more comfortable unless you can work something out more concrete and capable of being agreed upon by all the concerned parties, of just leaving it to the discretion of IRE. I think that the intent of your amendment, and I think it would be the intent of the committee in general, would be to see the effect that you want to achieve happen, but I'm not sure that this is the right way to do it. Would you be willing to just continue a discussion with IRE on this?
Mr. Chair, the best way to continue that would probably be if the language was in there. It's always more difficult to keep those who are interested in it not doing their attention by not having it in the bill. So I guess that's why I would ask, if it's in there, it'd be easier to discuss it. But, Mr. Chair, that's also a little to the point. And as I ask these questions at the Morris Research Station, and I have to ask them because the staff is silenced and not able to ask until or answer until asked. But Mr. Hemmingson talked about $4 million, but that primarily was targeted and directed in the 03. But we're talking about the administrative research dollars in of the SIP money that Excel has spent. Morris only gets about $200,000, $250,000, just barely the 10% or a little over, if that at all. So, and that's been 4 years now, and so why this research can't, in conjunction, work together. 80% stays at the main campus under this number. So, Mr. Chair, if you're willing to, I think it'd be easier to discuss it if it was in the bill than not in the bill. But I guess you're the chair, and you can give me the ultimate direction.
Well, Representative Westrom, as I said, I think at this time I would feel more comfortable putting this amendment in the bill, because I don't think we have a sufficiently good understanding of what some of the ramifications might be. But I am interested in continuing the discussion, and this bill has a lot of stops to make. It's going to be heard in at least three more committees.
Mr. Chair, if you're willing.
I am willing to continue the discussion, Representative Westrom.
If you're willing to even let me bring an amendment on the floor, potentially, as discussions persist, I guess that'd be better than nothing. I just know without your help, Mr. Chair, it might be tough to do. And I thought the university was going to do more than the minimum of 4 years ago when they asked to not have any number in there, and unfortunately that hasn't been the case. And so I simply would ask that we can split some of the research dollars that's going into it. It doesn't all have to happen right at the main Twin Cities campus. But if you're willing to work on trying to get this addressed in the future, Mr. Chair, we can go that route as well.
Well, as I said, I certainly would be willing to do that, Representative Westrom. Do you want to...
I'll withdraw the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom withdraws the amendment. Members, we heard on Friday, House File 2306, engendered considerable discussion since then. I think many of the concerned parties have come together and kind of found a comfort level. On that issue, it was the issue of off-site renewable distributed generation. I do have the A3 amendment that deals with that and with the language that has been worked out. I think that's in your packets. So I would offer the A3 amendment. H1392A3. A lot of paper to sort through, but I think it's there somewhere. It's the H1392A3 amendment. Remove that amendment. Is there a discussion to the amendment? Representative Magnus, that was H1392A3. And the original bill was House File 2306, I'm sorry. discussion to the amendment. Is there anyone who wishes to testify for or against the amendment? Representative Welty?
Chairman Healthy, could you please explain what the current provision is and then what you're changing it to, since I'm trying to reference this between the bills and what happened?
I think I'll have to call on Mr. Eloff to do that. I don't have a copy of the original bill in front of me at the moment.
And neither do I, Mr. Chair, but my recollection is that the original bill called on the PUC to initiate proceedings to come up with rules for this interconnection. And this bill talks about the Commissioner of Commerce convening a broad group of stakeholders to evaluate the feasibility of that.
Representative Welty, I think the difference in essence is that instead of calling for an actual proceeding, this is just calling for a stakeholder group. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Healthy. We're still trying to locate the correct amendment.
Representative Beard.
I know, and maybe this is where Representative Welty come from. There's a 2503A3 amendment and a 1392A3 amendment. Is there a... I'm going to be going through all these. Obviously, they're two different amendments. 1392 is to this bill. Where's 2503 going or 2305? Different set of amendments, or did I miss something this morning?
Representative Beard, we... what I said this morning essentially was we've had a great deal of difficulty figuring out exactly how bills were going to line up with the Senate. And I've had discussions with our leadership and with the chief clerk's office, and we felt that there was more assurance that we would line up with the Senate companion without any difficulties or more maneuvering if we simply use House File 1392, which does have a Senate companion, which is in the Senate Finance Bill, rather than House File 2305. So I simply substituted those this morning. So 2305 is not going anywhere.
So but 2305 amendments?
The 2305 amendments would apply to this, to 1392, and all we need to do is change the number on them when they're offered. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, I'm assuming then that it's in an effort to line up more closely with the Senate that we're doing, for lack of a better term, non-energy bills together to make this line up with the Senate, the mortgage bills and things like that, or the part.
Well, Representative Hoppe, no, that's because we do have the Commerce Department in our finance division. And these are Commerce Department bills. Most of them, if not all, most of them at least are department bills.
Okay.
And many of them are reflected in our budget.
Just checking.
has everyone been able to find the H1392A3 amendment? And is there any discussion to that amendment? I ask if anyone in the audience wished to testify. Seeing no one and no discussion, Chair will renew his motion. All those in favor of adopting the H1392A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Atkins, nice that you could make it in your busy schedule. Members, we have in the packet the H1392A1 amendment. that some of you may find needs explanation. Basically, these are sections that were not intended to be included in the first place, but perhaps Representative Adkins, you could explain what's going on here with the H1392A1 amendment, which the chair will move for adoption.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is House File 1251, which was inadvertently rolled into the omnibus bill. This is good faith legislation, and it has found a home or will likely find a home elsewhere. With that in mind, this amendment simply takes out that good faith legislation.
Any
takes it out.
What? Representative News.
Mr. Chair, I would strongly support this amendment, having already seen the bill in Representative Atkins Committee. Thank you. Not that I don't support the bill, but I would like it somewhere else. I've already voted for it.
In one way or another, Representative News, I think everyone would like it somewhere else.
I hope that's not a reflection on the author.
Not at all, Representative Atkins.
Different place.
Is there any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion that H1392A1 amendment be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Atkins, do we have the amendment reflecting House File 1359?
There should be an A2 amendment in your packet, Mr. Chair.
The chair will move the H1392A2 amendment. Members, this is a bill from the Commerce Committee that frankly, we had intended to include in the delete all, but somehow the language did not get included, and I asked Representative Atkins, who is the author of the bill, to come and explain the bill to us.
Representative Atkins, and I'm happy to be here to discuss the A2 amendment. This bill was heard and passed out of the Commerce and Labor Committee. It essentially is an update of Minnesota's No-Fault Automobile Insurance Act. All of you, at least I hope all of you, purchased No-Fault Automobile Insurance. It's mandatory in Minnesota, has been since 1973. This updates several provisions within that act. For example, currently if you're involved in an accident and you have wage loss, you are entitled to $250. This is the coverage that you pay for. You're entitled to $250 a week in coverage. Nowadays, that's a little bit behind the times. This simply takes that from $250 to $500, so from about $8 an hour to about $15 or $16 an hour. Reflective of essentially about a $30,000 a year job. For most people, it still won't make you whole, but it's a little bit more updated. It also updates, for example, the funeral provision under the old, the current law. You have $2,000 to pay for a funeral. Anybody that's had to pay for one lately knows it's considerably more than that, so this updates it from $2,000 to $5,000. There's also, if you have to hire out currently within the law, if you have to hire somebody to do your yard work, your housework, that kind of stuff, the original or the current law is $200 a week for that. This just updates that to $600 a week. There's other provisions in there. Staffing, for example, right now it's if you have multiple cars, you're allowed to stack those coverages and get additional coverage. This just says that that's automatically going to happen unless you opt not to have that done. That's essentially what the bill does. There's a couple other, I guess there's not a whole lot more to it, folks. I'm happy to stand for questions or concerns that you may have, but this is certainly not in the realm of the good faith bill that you've undoubtedly gotten one or two emails about. I suspect that you probably haven't gotten any about this one.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, the stacking provision you're talking about, Minnesota law used to automatically stack, then they went away from that, as I understand, and you're going back, and is that on two or more vehicles, or is it more than two? You have to have a certain number of vehicles before stacking occurs.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, that's exactly what
Representative
it does. Is if you have two or more, you would just go to the default, then would be that you have stacked coverage. Literally, and Mr. Johnson is here, I know that he can tell you, and others in the room, it may be as few dollars as $5 or $6 or $7 to stack your coverage. The agents that I've spoken to actually like to sell it. It provides you with more coverage. And it's what we, as far as I remember, it's what we used to do. And now you can still opt out of doing it, by the way. Nobody's forcing you to stack your coverage. But it does give you additional coverage for a few dollars a month or a few dollars per premium. And it makes more sense, I think, to do it that way.
But, Mr. Chair, so Representative Atkins, current law means they have to offer it to you, or they don't even have to offer it to you, and if they don't offer it to you, you don't have it stacked automatically without signing or electing to have it. If I'm understanding that correctly, in the second part of my question, these are increases, is that peace in the valley with most of the insurance companies, or is there kind of some rumbling going on both ways yet?
Representative Atkins, what's your
Representative Valley? Representative Westrom, the first question, yes. The second question, to the extent that there's been any testimony with respect to this bill, there has been none with regard to the stacking provision. I think, in fairness to Mr. Johnson, he does believe that other provisions, such as the additional wage loss going from 250 to 500 to be more reflective of today's times, might cause an increase in premiums to some degree, though no one has actually quantified that. But I haven't heard anything in opposition to the stacking provision. Other than, in fact, the only comments that I've gotten with respect to the stacking have been from agents who called me and said, we'd prefer it to be done the way you're proposing.
Thanks.
Further questions for Representative Atkins? Representative Nornes, I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, a simple question, I guess. I'm sure four vehicles, this going to raise or lower my premiums. Does it have any impact at all? Or if so, which direction?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nornes.
Representative Atkins.
Frankly, I don't believe that it will have any impact. The fact is that we're not, you also required, as you know, to have at least $20,000 in coverage for medical bills and $20,000 in coverage for wage loss. This doesn't change any of that, though I did get some arguments that we should bump that up too to reflect today's times. So this doesn't change the amount to which you'd be entitled on an ongoing basis. Although, if you stack your vehicles, if you in fact put, and you can opt out of that, Representative Nornes, but if you stack all four, it's probably, I guess it might cost you another $20 or $30. I do it on my vehicles, I think it cost me $18. But you can opt out of it if you want.
All right, thank you.
My thought, Representative Nornes, is if you stack all four, the one on the bottom might sustain some damage. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I guess since we haven't heard anything about this and it's a little bit outside of our normal energy subject matter, do we get to hear from anybody from the insurance industry, if there's anyone here that can shed a little more light on this?
I think Mr. Johnson is here if he would like to bring his...
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota.
Let the record reflect.
Please. We need more microphones up here, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I don't know how, I normally don't come to energy and heating assistance and environment, and there is no impact of this bill on the operations or budget of the Commerce Department. There's no question about that. It's a straightforward bill that increases the mandated coverages under our no-fault auto law. I testified against the bill at the House Commerce Committee. It was a roll call vote. The Republicans all voted against it, and the Democrats voted for it, just by way of history for this committee, to know the policy committee on the bill. And I don't have a letter here, members, but we'll actuarially price it, and if not here on the floor tell you this is going to increase premiums. There's no question about that from our industry's perspective. Our members write this stuff, all of it. And I'm disappointed because, frankly, the current law gives consumers the choices. The stacking law, Representative Westrom, that you referenced, today you have the choice to stack it. It's not automatic. This makes it automatic unless you get to some sort of an opt-out. It will increase your premiums. There's no question about that. And I think from our industry's perspective, affordability of insurance is already a problem. We have at least 450,000 cars on Minnesota roads driving without insurance. At least 450,000. And we just think we need to do more to help on the affordability, and this is not going to help. Consumers have the options to buy higher coverage amounts. They can stack it. They have the option. They have the option to buy higher basic economic loss benefits. They don't. They don't buy higher amounts, and the reason they don't is because they're having enough problem affording what they have today. And so, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and frankly, it was only because of the timing, the stacking, we do have a problem with that. We think that the consumers having the ability to choose to do it should be left that way. This makes it automatically stacked on multiple cars and policies unless they elect not to stack. And the negative option choices, frankly, don't work. We think it's better to give the consumer the choice. So, Mr. Chairman, I just think from our industry's perspective, what we believe is that this is a system that has no medical cost controls. And I know this isn't a policy committee, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to belabor this because I know you need to move on. You have a lot here. But just urge the committee members to think about this. Medical care under your auto policies, there's no medical cost controls. None. Zero. Nada. Nothing. And so a treatment of a knee injury coming out of a car accident, that treatment may get $500 under the work comp, or excuse me, under the no-fault system. Under the work comp system, it may get $250. Under the major medical system, it may get $175, and under some of the government programs, it may get $100. The point of the mechanism, and that's the exact same medical care, the exact same. And so one of these days, we actually have to get at this issue. Under this first-party medical coverage, are we going to put, there's no fee schedules, there's no treatment standards, there's no nothing in the law. And I'm just here to tell this committee that impacts consumer costs. I know this isn't today or the bill for the debate, but we do oppose the bill. We just believe we need to put something in the law, and this isn't the time to move forward with higher coverage amounts. So hopefully that helps, Mr. Chairman and committee members, a little better flavor. But we'll have something formal so that if... this is part of this energy bill that when it gets to the floor that we'll have some formal pricing so you know on behalf of your consumers, your constituents who buy this product, what exactly it does to their premiums. I'm here to suggest it's going to go up. I don't have a dollar amount. We'll have it more formally done, and then we'll have that available so you know what you're voting on in terms of the dollar amount. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, and I don't think Mr. Johnson intended to misstate the law with regard to cost control on medical bills, but there is, in fact, a process in place that requires that these bills be reasonable and necessary and related to the incident, the accident. They have an ability to send folks to their own doctor. They have an ability to terminate benefits. So there are, in fact, very strenuous cost controls in place. And I won't, I guess, talk about the billions in profits and executive compensation that insurance companies have done. If they really wanted to bring down premiums, I suppose they could take a look at that, too. But I think I'll leave that for some other discussion.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, or Representative Atkins, excuse me, Mr. Chair. On the amendment on line 1.8, the new language, and items that provide relief from any injury, would that be up to and including medical marijuana? Thought I'd throw that in, Mr. Chair. Keep things lively.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe.
Representative Atkins.
Again, there are there's already within the statute provisions that apply that say that it must be reasonable and necessary and related to the accident. If that was the case, then yes. If that was not the case, then no. But right now, we don't even have within our statute this section, which would provide coverage for casts and walkers and canes, and I think it's important that we do.
Representative New.
Just a clarification, and we've thrown along raise premium, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins won't raise premiums. In terms of increasing the weekly wage and the compensation for loss of work time and those sorts of things. You're not increasing overall coverage. You're the clarification for the committee and myself. You're not increasing overall coverage. It would change the rate at which it's given out. And so, in that sense, the coverage remains the same, just to clear that up for the committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, that's exactly right.
Representative Atkins.
Currently, you've got $20,000 in coverage available. At $500 a week, it would take 40 weeks to pay out. So if somebody's seriously injured and their wage loss is paying, you know, maybe they're making $60,000 or $70,000 a year, they're still not going to be made whole. But this gets them their $20,000 in 40 weeks rather than in 80 weeks. So the same amount is paid out. It's just paid out a little bit sooner.
Further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A or H1392A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Atkins, I think we have a couple of extraction amendments here while you're with the committee. Chair will move the H1392A10 amendment. Representative Atkins, do you have that amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Would you care to explain that one?
I would be happy to. This is on line 1.16. You'll notice this is on behalf of state banks, and Steve Johnson is here as well to explain this. But this basically allows them to go to 35% of their total assets in terms of, I think it puts them on par with federal banks, by the way. Currently, they can take up to 25%. This just changes it to 35%. There is peace in the valley. There was literally no opposition. I don't think there was even any testimony. This just got placed in your bill, I think, in the as introduced as opposed to the engrossed version. So this is literally just what came out of our committee, and I believe it passed unanimously.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Atkins, just to double-check what you just said, this provision as a standalone bill or as a provision did get a hearing in Commerce?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, yes.
Further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A10 amendment, the H1392 A10 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? That amendment is adopted. And members, there's one further amendment relating to the Commerce sections of the bill. That would be the H1392A9 amendment. Chair will move adoption of that amendment. That would delete section 43, which I can explain, I believe. We do have House File 1748 incorporated in the bill. That's a Commerce Department bill. It was engrossed in the Commerce Committee. What Section 43 represents is a section of the bill as it was introduced that was deleted in Commerce, and it was just inadvertently included in this bill because we looked at the bill as introduced rather than the engrossment. So are there any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, it's always easier to take things out than put them in, I guess. All those in favor of the H1392A9 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Mr. Chair, that was fun. Let's take some more stuff out.
What do we have next, Mr. Conway?
Chairman.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 44 and Section 45, are those mortgage-related items, too? Are they intended to stay in the bill?
That's a very good question, Representative Hackbarth, and that's exactly why we have Mr. Pender here with us this afternoon. And I think he can answer that question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hackbarth, I think you asked about Section 44 and what was the other one?
45.
44 deals with the changes in Chapter 58 on mortgage originators that are earlier in the section here, including the things that were talked about before, the stiffer licensing requirements and so on. So that Section 44 should stay in the bill. And Section 45, the first two repealers are things that were in House File 2056 that are, I'd say, not related to finance matters, and the other repeal there of a subdivision of 58.08 is related to the things that are in the bill and should certainly be, would need to be kept in to go with that. So the first two, I'd say, are optional as far as their policy issues.
I'm not sure that entirely clarified the issue, Mr. Pender. I think it's clear enough on Section 44, Representative Hackbarth, that was part of the bill that we did have testimony on from Mr. Sexton earlier. Mr. Pender, what is being repealed in Section 45?
Mr. Chair, there are three items there. The first one deals with repealing a kind of an obsolete statute on organizational expenses of banks and putting what seems like an extreme limit on them in today's world in terms of what they can spend money on to get organized. I think the fear used to be that they'd incur debt in organizing the bank and then go broke immediately after they got set up. And the second one there in Section 47.62 deals with ATM terminals and whether banks and credit unions and so on have to notify the Commissioner of Commerce that they're setting up a new ATM terminal. Under this law, any time they set up a new one anywhere, they have to notify the Commissioner, and that's proposed for repeal, I think, because the Department feels like it's not necessary, that they don't do anything with that information.
Representative Osmond.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think because of the lack of understanding of exactly what some of these provisions are doing or not doing, just want the Chair to know that these questions will probably be coming up on the floor or other places, and it's not that we're not wanting to bring them up in committee. It's just we're not really prepared to do a great deal of that today.
I understand that, Representative Osmond, and I actually would appreciate if if you want to thoroughly vet these. This is part of a bill that has been heard in Commerce and passed out of Commerce, and any questions that want to be raised or any amendments regarding them that you want to bring up as the bill progresses, I'm fine with me.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, because as we get a chance to confer with our members that serve on Commerce, we may have some objections that we're not really aware of right now, and so don't want you to be offended that we're not trying to bring things up here and hitting you later on. It's just that we're not prepared right now.
Yep. No, I appreciate that, Representative Osmond. Uh, So, where are we?
I still have a couple amendments. But.
Representative Westrom, we are past our time. What do we have the range for time, Mr. Palmer?
Wednesday.
We have extra time on Wednesday. And time in the evening. Representative Westrom, there are a number of amendments that remain. I think that what we will do is wrap this up, adjourn, and we'll take up the bill again on Wednesday and give people a chance to look at some of these things to make sure that they understand the elements in the bill that might be unfamiliar and to bring forward amendments as they see fit. Did we act on, do we have an amendment before us at this time?
No, we had clips
on the act.
Yeah. Okay. So,
Mr. Chair?
Before we adjourn, Representative Lester?
Well, and maybe you're going to cover this sort of in advance. I'll really try to work out the IRE funding amendment by then, and maybe I can have a agreeable language. Schedule for Wednesday, originally we were looking at Wednesday and then possibly Wednesday night. Is that probably still the likely outcome?
Mr. Pomeroy?
Yeah. Right now the committee only has the room Wednesday during our regular time. There's a possibility we could work out a trade with some other committee that's in here. I think Heritage Finance is in here Wednesday night. Otherwise, we have the room Thursday evening and Friday afternoon and evening.
Could we move to a different room otherwise, Mr. Palmer?
Well,
I mean, is that an option?
Representative Lester, we'll work on that. I don't think that the Heritage Finance Committee is a smaller committee, and they may not need the time anyway. So we'll see if we can work out a trade with them so that we do have the room available on Wednesday. We'll try to find something.
Okay.
And Representative Magina?
No. I think what I was supposed to comment on this, Mr. Johnson's wonderful comments about why we should be, or the best speech I've heard actually, why we should go to single payer health care. So I appreciate this comment. So,
there is no further business before the committee at this time. Representative West?
Just one more question, and I know we're over time. I heard that on Wednesday we might also look at another bill and possibly roll in the global warming, the seabed, and the SIP bill together. Is that still a possibility? And if so, is there language that we could look at, or just look at the bills as they pass out?
Representative Westrom, it is my intention, as soon as we wrap up the finance bill, to take up House File 436. It's also my intention in some form to substitute the language of House Files 1221 and I don't remember the seabed language.
2253.
Thank you. And also some version of House File 375. And discussions continue on that bill in particular. And we will be taking that up later in the week.
Okay. And that, Mr. Chair, essentially would be the agenda for the week?
It may arise that there would be an additional bill or two that comes to our attention that I'm not aware of at the moment, but so far that would be that would be the agenda for the week.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, members, the meeting is adjourned.